Well, I've always contended, Hal, that these folks have an agenda. And the agenda is to disarm the American people and the truth be damned.
Well, you were one of the persons interviewed in the videotape that the John Birch Society did on the United Nations.
Correct.
And it dealt with global gun control. And really, this is really what it boils down to. I'm not saying the average person who mindlessly yaps about gun control is part of the agenda, but back in 61, the State Department document 7277 spelled it out, and it's quite clear and quite brutal. They want to control, they want to confiscate all weapons, except of those of agreed types and quantities to be used by UN Peace Force. And we see what the UN Peace Force does around the world. And that
They're
this
very
really,
treacherous people.
In fact, I love your most recent little cartoon about the UN. And this is another issue that even some of the gun organizations don't talk about. You do, and I'm very glad that your organization does. First of all, the UN has always been an enemy of the Jewish people. When they refer to Zionism as racism, they officially changed that a few years ago. They gave observation status to the premier, Nazi-communist-racist anti-Semite in the world, Yasser Arafat, who, by the way, now is getting money from American taxpayers, and he got the Nobel Peace Prize because he hasn't blown up any school buses in the last couple of years, at least officially, or murdered any athletes. So therefore, he gets some Nobel Peace Prize. And where is he going? He's not visiting the anti-Semitic groups around the country on the speaking tours. He's visiting the White House. You see, those are the kind of people that love this man, the world's premier anti-Semite. Yet, I can imagine that 10 years ago, if the John Birch Society sponsored a speaking tour of this fellow, this contemptible human being, the left would have rightfully condemned us. But now he's getting the rolling out the carpet for this creep at the White House. See? So that should get people thinking.
Should get people thinking as to how anti-American many of our so-called politicians are within America. Truly anti-American.
In the novel Mitzvah, you had a very interesting, and I guess this is the kind of part you want to reread, where one of the priest, after he had his conversion, his ideological conversion anyway, he gave a sermon about the criminals, the gun controllers, and so forth and so on, and he was basically told to reconsider his views or be fired, and it was the head of the Chicago Archdiocese, he was given a fictional name, and he was a big gun owner. But of course, those laws are for other people, not for the elite.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Of course, we've seen that. Carl Rowan is an example of that. Carl Rowan, the syndicated columnist, who a few years ago shot a couple of kids who were simply swimming in their swimming pool. Now, I'm not going to shoot people if they're picking tomatoes in my backyard. I might tell them to get out of there. I'm not going to shoot them and try to kill them for simply picking tomatoes. I don't have a pool. I'm not wealthy enough to have a pool. I've got a little wading pool for my children. That doesn't count, though. I'm not one of the elite. But here he was, an advocate of gun control, and he uses these weapons and tries to kill these kids simply swimming in his swimming pool.
You notice where he got the weapon, by the way. The story goes he got it from his son, who's an
FBI.
Agent.
Yes. Well, we're having another break, and please stay tuned for Aaron Zellman. And also, we need your calls, 883-1590, and we'll be back. Another break, and please stay tuned for Aaron Zellman. And also, we need your calls, 883-1590, and we'll be back. I am filling in for Ann Concession on Radio Free New Hampshire, and on the line with me is Aaron Zellman, Executive Director for the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. We were talking about many things in the last segment. And we talked about the UN. Also, one of the cartoon comic books they have to educate people is Gun Control is Racist. And, of course, we're not trying to imply that automatically that if you support gun control, you're a racist. But I think Mr. Zellman can elaborate on that. Give us some background information, some history of gun controls and how it is indeed racist.
Sure, thank you. You know, most people don't realize how gun control started in America by not allowing slaves or newly freed slaves or free blacks, as they call them then, to own firearms. That is the genesis of gun control in America. And that it has continued on and on and on, and many of these laws we have today, gun registration as an example, or a permit to carry a firearm, or special taxes, all of this originated from racist policies. And so gun control is very much a racist concept. Even today, if you go into a retail store, if anybody's ever filled out one of the yellow forms, known as the 4473, they still ask what a person's race is. And that's after they have, of course, the serial number of the firearm, the make, the manufacturer, your address, and all the other information that they want. So the 68 Gun Control Act was passed. One of the reasons was to track who was buying firearms, and they wanted to make it more difficult for black Americans to buy firearms.
And it's much easier to control individuals who are, we know they're disarmed. We know that the government
knows. Again, you know, the one thing that has to be in place to have an effective police state is a disarmed citizenry.
And I think all advocates of total government know that very much. It's interesting, we here in New England, Vermont, Maine, and New Hampshire usually have the lowest crime in the country. Usually Vermont, I think, is the lowest in the country. And we're talking about per capita crime.
Mm-hmm.
Vermont's about 500,000 people. And it's also the most heavily armed state, more gun owners in Vermont than anywhere else in the country. Yet the crime rate's the lowest. And usually I'll debate people who support gun control and will say, well, because it's a rural state, it should be irrelevant. It's the question of people, private citizens. And they'll say, yes, but in cities like Washington and Boston and here and there. And I'll say, well, wait a minute. What population are you talking about? And they eventually, using the Socratic method, they're able to say, well, these are poor neighborhoods, minorities. They don't always say this. So if you got the crime, if you looked at all the statistics, how many people are killed, and broke it down per square mile, where most of the crimes are being committed, you would look at probably inner cities where most of the crimes happen. And we're talking about a relatively small part of the country. You went a couple hundred square miles when you get down to it. And, of course, living in inner cities is where the crime is, and that's where the gun should be needed by law-abiding citizens more than anyone else.
And also, if you think about it, those are the areas where they push, the government pushes 911 on people the most.
That's right. That's right. Call 911. And rely on the government to save you, but don't rely upon yourself. Really, they're not making cowards out of us. And in Massachusetts, when we had the illustrious Governor Dukakis, who ran for president, they were trying to make it illegal to shoot somebody in your home. And today, in most people around the country, it's very difficult. If you shoot somebody in the home who's broken into your home, then you're usually arrested. Automatically, you're a suspect. And, of course, the average patrolman probably doesn't want to do this, but they have to abide by the rules and regulations. So automatically, when you see that person breaking into your home, you're thinking, I'm going to go to jail if I shoot this guy. And, you know, of course, you usually think you're saving your family's life first. And when people do, in fact, in Massachusetts, there was a black man who used a gun to save his life. And he spent, because the gun wasn't licensed, he spent a year in jail. The criminal didn't go to jail at all. He spent a year in jail.
Well, we're hopeful that this book we're bringing out, Dial 911 and Die, will help people in these situations, because it will expose the big fraud that the government has perpetrated of getting people to rely on the government to protect them when the government has no obligation to do so.
So
hopefully this will be a tool when the book comes out in a couple of weeks to help people fight this battle and not be so reticent about defending their lives.
One of the problems I encountered in my travels is that a lot of people get discouraged. They think that it's hopeless, it's too late, we have no chance. Give us some examples of people who are affiliated with your organization that have used this information and have won battles and have changed minds and hearts and such.
Well, I think one of the most intriguing ways that this is being done is by a program we've been promoting as Bill of Rights Day, all of the Bill of Rights for all citizens. December 15, 1791, the Bill of Rights was ratified. And we've had people around the country promoting Bill of Rights Day. And in doing so, they're reaching out to other people who, you know, don't think much about the Second Amendment because they have other priorities in their life. They may not necessarily be against the Second Amendment, you know, firearms ownership, but they're beginning to realize that the Bill of Rights really is a package deal. And that if they're concerned about their First Amendment rights or Fifth Amendment rights or states' rights, they have to support all of the Bill of Rights for all citizens. So that, in a general way, has been very helpful in getting people to think more about the entire Bill of Rights. I think also our little booklets, the Grandpa Jack series of illustrated booklets that you call comic books, have been very useful on a national basis. We have over 500,000 copies now in circulation. And we've had a number of people who call and they just give us some anecdotal information about how they had a family member who, you know, was a real ardent supporter of Handgun Control Incorporated. And after looking at our material, they're rethinking their position, at the very least. And I think that this is a, there was another situation in Massachusetts where there was a politician who's now retired, who upon looking at our information decided to vote against the bill to outlaw the possession of semi-automatic weapons, and his one vote sunk it. Now, he retired, it sunk the bill. He did retire. Following year, somebody came in, replaced him, who was, to put it bluntly, didn't give a damn about the Bill of Rights, and they were able to push the ban through. So what it takes is just constant vigilance and in promoting the concept of freedom, and you can't stop. And that's one of the things I think gun owners can be faulted upon, too, by the way, is that we'll win some kind of small victory and then just go back to our hobbies instead of continuing to turn this crank constantly and then to promote more freedom ideas.
Well, one of the things that I do...
The enemy never rests.
No, and they're well-funded, too.
Unfortunately, gun owners get too complacent.
One of the things that I do when I pick up newspapers and see letters in the newspaper, either pro or against the gun issue, I'll try to get information to these people's hands and send them a nice little cover letter, hoping to educate them, hoping to, if they're Second Amendment advocates, to reinforce the fact that you know, there's a lot of people out there that feel this way, or at least if I can't educate and motivate, I want to anger, you know, get some of these people who are adamant gun control advocates, or I challenge them to debates. And you know what? None of the gun control advocates in Boston want to debate me on my various, I had done a TV show in the past.
Well, they're not happy with the facts. They're not happy with the truth. They just assume other people be totally ignorant of them. You know, I'll give you an example. You know, gun control advocates never speak out against rapists. Gun control advocates never speak out in favor of people staying alive. And these are areas where they're very vulnerable. You know, we have a new T-shirt as an example on our webpage. I hope people are able to go there. And again, it's jpfo.org, but it shows a woman, there's a ski mask rapist standing behind her, pulling off her dress, you see her shoulder exposed. She's trying to unlock her trigger lock, and underneath the caption says, you know, trigger locks, rapist approved.
Well, we're going to our final break, and please stay on, stay tuned to Radio Free America, Radio Free New Hampshire, Wisconsin, and before the show ends, we'll give out phone numbers and email numbers again. The Second Amendment is of course, it's the second one, so it must be pretty important, of the Bill of Rights. And the word people is used, and I recommend everybody to memorize this. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Sounds rather absolute to me. The word people is interesting, too. It's spelled P-E-O-P-L-E. And you find the word people in the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, the Ninth and Tenth Amendments as well. However, these gun control advocates ignorantly or deliberately say that the word people somehow means National Guard, which of course that term didn't exist until the turn of the century. Aaron, what are your comments on the Second Amendment, the word people, and some of the arguments that are used to basically discredit this amendment, this very vital amendment?
Well, let us start with... The whole concept of the Bill of Rights was, in effect, a written affirmation of rights that existed before.
Before, correct.
Before the very existence of the government. Before the very existence of America. The right to bear arms, the right to defend one's life is an unalienable right. It's a God-given right. And people have the right to defend their life. That's the way God wants it. So these people, let me use the term, these individuals, whatever they are, I don't even consider them people sometimes, these creatures.
Bipeds?
Pardon me?
Bipeds?
you could call them that if you want. These anti-American creatures, their whole goal, again, is an agenda to destroy the ability of people to defend themselves against big government. And so that's why they use these weasel words. But it's important that people understand that the right to defend one's life is what the Second Amendment is all about, and that it was and that this right existed before the government existed. Also, I think it's important for people to understand the term well-regulated within the Second Amendment clause. Well-regulated in the terms of the day, well, those words meant well-prepared, orderly, well-drilled. It did not mean government-regulated. And one can go to the Oxford Dictionary and look up the term well-regulated and find it there for themselves.
And it's interesting to note that the important thing, again, of course, is that every state constitution has a similar provision defending or protecting, not giving, but protecting that right to keep and bear arms or self-defense. In some states, I think New Hampshire, the word is, or the term, it shall not be questioned. Pennsylvania, the same way. But unfortunately, a lot of these politicians have been questioning it or ignoring it.
Well, you see, this is one of the problems we have, Hal, is that that's why we started Bill of Rights Day, is that people don't know what their rights are. It's pretty easy to destroy them right before their very eyes.
What's fascinating is that I do information tables at various events, even gun shows, and I have a 10-question quiz, and I give free constitutions for those who take it. You'd be surprised, or maybe you won't be surprised, how little people know. Law students who don't know simple things about the Constitution. And, of course, if you don't know anything about it, it's easy to destroy it.
Well, they're not taught it. In other words, in fact, I'll be giving a speech later on this week dealing with the Second Amendment. And Richard Stevens, the attorney who helped me put this together, made it very clear that as a former law professor, he's well aware that the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, is what little of it is taught very poorly in law schools. And so if you have lawyers who don't understand it, and you have judges who don't understand it, is it any wonder that the people don't understand what their rights are? And is it any wonder, is it any mystery as to why the people are not supposed to understand what their rights are?
In one of your publications, you used the term, you referred to gun owners as the people being demonized. And by the way, I didn't mean to demonize, if I had meant to, I meant tongue-in-cheek, people who oppose us. At least those who do it ignorantly, because those enemies of gun ownership have referred to people who own guns as nuts and kooks and wackos and such, and automatically there's a stigma attached in many people who are fear defending that because of a label, much like what happened in Nazi Germany. You dehumanize a Jew, you get propaganda specialists that say that Jews are subhuman, or beneath, not completely evolved, and other items. So it's much easier to kill or to persecute. David Koresh was a right-wing fanatic kook. He deserved what he got. It's much easier to feel good about ourselves after we've been conditioned to accept or to believe things about certain human beings. But, you know, David Koresh, while I disagree with his views, was a human being who had children that loved him. And the people in China are human beings that had the same aspirations. The people that were Nazi Germany, had the Jews, and others that were under the Hitler's boot had the same aspirations as we have. We're human beings. They're human beings. Gun owners are human beings, too. They're not kooks and fanatics. And, in fact, they're very few. The incidents that you hear about, most of these people aren't law-abiding, God-fearing types. They're the other types. You know, that just fell out in California who had these anti-Semitic leanings.
No, but I would also suggest that the people who demonize gun owners and others who are God-fearing are not God-fearing at all, and that they're the ones who wear the jackboots. And if you call them Nazis, I think it's a very accurate description.
Well, a Nazi is one who advocates total government. So obviously, if those folks advocate that, and anyone who wants to deny certain basic human rights and fundamental rights to individuals, what other term can apply? Aaron, give us some more, give us your addresses again and things that your organization provides, information that people might want to get a hold of.
Thank you. Our webpage address again is jpfo.org. Our phone number is 414-673-9745. Our fax number is 9746. And our address would be JPFO Incorporated, as short for Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, P.O. Box 270-143. And we're in the city of Hartford, Hartford, Wisconsin, WI 53027.
Okay, you've been listening to Radio Free of New Hampshire, the Ann Conception Show, and Aaron Zellman of the JPFO. Aaron, thank you very much.
My pleasure, thank you.
And God bless you.
Take care.